Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show. Each week, we feature different topics concerning issues that sometimes can be difficult to talk about. These issues concern children and adults who may be autistic, have Asperger's, or have mental disorders of any kind. We will discuss law enforcement and how they interact with these persons. Now, let's start the show. Good evening, and welcome to the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White show. My name is Jenny White, and I'm the children's book author of the Junior Rabbit series. There's a surprise for Junior, Looney the Loon and the Littered Lake, and Junior Rabbit learns about Christmas. You may purchase one, two, or all three by going to my website, www.jennysreadingcorner.com. That's J-E-N-N-Y-S readingcorner.com. Or you may call 248-943-3974. Thank you guys for listening tonight. The first thing I'd like to tell you is those of you that are listening by phone, you may press the 1 if you would like to make a comment or ask a question. Tonight, I think you're going to enjoy the show. We're having a great show. We're going to be talking about cocaine addiction. The first thing I would like to say about an addiction is that it's a chronic disease that changes the brain, but the disease of addiction is also preventable and treatable. When a disease is chronic, that means it's long-lasting. It can't be cured, but it can be managed with treatment. Other examples include asthma, diabetes, and heart disease. And I'd like to give you 10 facts about cocaine, starting with number 10. After marijuana, cocaine is the second most commonly used illicit drug, which means illegal, in the United States. Number 9. Cocaine is more dangerous when combined with alcohol or marijuana. Number 8. In the first hour after cocaine use, the user's heart attack risk is almost 24 times greater. Number 7. The average street price for a gram of pure cocaine in the United States currently is between $80 and $100. Number 6. Approximately 10% of people who begin using cocaine will immediately progress to serious, heavy use of the drug. Number 5. It takes 500 kilos of coca leaves to produce 1 kilo of cocaine. Number 4. More than 400,000 babies are born addicted to cocaine each year in the United States. Number 3. Babies who are born to mothers who do cocaine can have brain damage, premature birth, and could face spontaneous abortion. Number 2. The soft drink Coca-Cola originally contained 9 milligrams of cocaine. It was officially removed from the drink's ingredients in 1903. And number 1. Cocaine is the most powerful central nervous stimulant found in nature. And I have heard that once you even start cocaine for the first time, that you are addicted. I don't know. We'll be asking our guest. We'll take a break now, but when we come back, we will introduce our guest. Stay with us.
Autism affects 1 in 68 children, sweeping all racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic groups. Autism is a lifelong brain disorder that leads to untold challenges to the physical, financial, and social well-being of people with autism and their families. Resources are stretched thin. The Autism Alliance of Michigan, a collective voice for families across the entire state, uses resources to help families battle challenges right here, right now. If you or anyone you know needs help navigating the autism journey, contact the Autism Alliance of Michigan today, 877-463-AAOM, or visit them online at aaomi.org.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White.
Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening. And we are back with our guest. And I'd like to ask our guest to introduce himself.
Hello, everyone. Okay. I'd like to introduce myself as Ronald M. I'm a native of Saginaw, Michigan. I was born and raised there. Spent a lot of years there. I went to the military in 1976. I was an honorable discharge in 1979. I came back to the States from Europe, and I've lived this life of addiction. And I'd like to tell you listeners a little bit about that.
Okay, well, Mr. Ronald, can I ask you, when did you first start getting into drugs?
Well, I started experimenting with marijuana when I was in high school, just a little bit. But that progress into drug use when I got to the military. And as I got out of the military, and you think that things will change for you, but it only got worse through the years.
So what you're saying is that you can get drugs while you're in the military.
Oh, yes. They run rampant in the military.
Okay. What branch of the military were you in?
I was in the Army.
But I guess if you say military, that includes all the branches. Am I right about that?
Yes. And judging from some of the veterans that talk with me, they all talk about their drug use and their alcoholism. All of that plays a part in what happens to people in their lives later on. And we think because we're young, that doesn't apply, but it does.
So were you also into alcohol as well?
No, I never drank. It was something I never done. And that was just something I just never liked. I had a lot of friends that drank, but that just wasn't my thing. That's not something I'd like to do.
That's really interesting that you would get into drugs and not into alcohol.
Yeah.
That's
well,
just interesting. So well, can you tell us, when you got out of the military, you went back to Saginaw, sorry.
Yes, I went back to Saginaw, and I stayed there for about 20, 30 years before I moved
being an
to,
addict.
And I was an addict all the time. You know, you can't sugarcoat that. I was always an addict. And anytime you even smoke marijuana, you're still an addict. That's still use of drugs.
Okay. Now, when you say you were an addict, were you like some addicts? Did you do any breaking and entering or stealing from people?
No, I never done anything like that. I always worked. And so I had this fixed idea that because I worked. I was entitled to do what I wanted to do.
Which was drugs.
But I mean,
so
yeah.
When you're doing cocaine, that means you're using a needle, right?
No. No, I never used a needle. No, I used it by smoking it and snorting it.
Oh, okay. Well, you were addicted, you said, about 20, 30 years?
Yes. Oh, a little over there.
So you came to Detroit. When you came to Detroit, were you addicted then as well?
I wasn't addicted to cocaine. I was more or less on just smoking marijuana. I continued smoking marijuana because I thought that just smoking marijuana was okay.
Okay, do you still smoke marijuana?
No, because that's all a part of the addiction. And I found that I had to find me some help because I didn't know. I started going to meetings a long time ago, but they never really stuck because I had reservations, and that was the reservations was that smoking weed was okay, but it really wasn't okay, and it threw back to the drug that you like to do. So I kept having the same characteristics of a crack smoker, the isolation, the not wanting to be involved with people, not liking people, those type of things. And those were things that didn't sit well with me. I lived in a dark world still.
So did you ever consider suicide?
No, that really never came. I just was very angry. I was angry at myself, but I just wanted the pain to stop. But that never crossed my mind. But I wanted to do something to someone else, and that wasn't, you know, and I knew that wasn't what I was here for.
So did you get into a lot of arguments with people?
Yes, I was a very, very angry man, very angry. I was very angry, and at times I would be violent.
Okay. So you did a lot of fighting? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I wouldn't say I did a lot of fighting, but I put myself into situations because I just wanted other people to hurt like me.
Okay. That sounds like, you know, it makes sense. So when you came to Detroit, you were still angry, or you came to Detroit looking for help?
I came to Detroit looking for a better way of life. I just knew that I needed not to be around certain people. And in my city, I'm very popular. A lot of people knew me. And so I was constantly around people that weren't good for me, that kept me in that frame of mind. So when I came to Detroit, I was looking for new people, positive people in my life.
Did you ever do drugs here in Detroit?
I smoked marijuana here until I found a way out.
So how did you find your way out?
One day I was sitting and I called my stepdaughter and asked her, could she to the VA, and because I needed some help. I needed to find someone to help me with my problem. And so that was the beginning. And I went, and this guy tells me about this place that I needed to go to talk about things that were going on in my life. And so when I went there and did that, they gave me some things about some places I could go and to get help. And so I never really read a lot of things that the people had given me when they give me a lot of things. But I sat down that night and I was reading and I found this place called the Domiciliary, which is a affiliation of the Veterans Administration. And it said on the card, we can help you. We can help you with your dental, if you have claims against the government, if you have substance abuse, we can help you with all that. And it just clicked. And so I sought out, and I went to, I called the numbers I needed to call and had an orientation. I went to the orientation, and the story began from there.
So all the time that you were in Saginaw, you never sought help?
I sought help, but not like when I came here. It wasn't, you know. I tried it, but then I found out later on that those were reservations that I was keeping. And the reservations was to continue to do drugs, even though you say you want to stop, but you really didn't, you know. And I kept finding a different reason to do it. Yeah, when I get mad, I'd go do drugs. And, you know, I didn't know anything about who I really was until I got to the domiciliary, and then God stepped in, and He placed me around people that could help me. And we had different groups, and so I was talking to one of the peer support specialists, and he says, "You know, you can't smoke weed, don't you?" And I says, "Man, that ain't nothing." And he says, "No, you have to abstain from all drugs, man." He said, "Or you're gonna go back to what you used to do," he said, "because your mind is clouded and you can't think right." And so the practitioner nurse told me, she says, "I want you to do 90 meetings in 90 days at an NA meeting." And I said, "Ma'am, I don't even like going to those meetings because all they talk about is drugs." And I said, "But I'll go since you told me." And I went there to the one next door to me, and I got a hug from a woman there, and the hug was so genuine that I had to come back. And I came back again, and it never, you know, it was like God just say, "Okay, we're not going to talk about, we're going to get him here, and we're going to keep him here." And He placed all of these people, good people, around me. And I was around a table of people who are just like me, who are looking for a way out, who said, "I'm done and I want to help myself and I want to do things the right way." And so through that, I thought that, you know, I just wanted to stop doing drugs, but that wasn't it. See, I can't change my life if I just stop doing drugs. I had to change everything about me. You know, I had to, it was hard, but, and it continues, you know, to be some things in my life that I continue to grow in. But one of the most important things was admitting that I had a problem. And the admission and the surrender to saying that I got a problem and I need some help and I don't know how to help myself. And so you face that, and then you talk with people who have faced your dilemma and know the way out. And so with that, you have to listen. And so I wasn't very much on listening to people. That was a problem that I had too. I didn't believe in people. I didn't trust people. But He said, "I got to trust somebody, and I'm putting these people around you, and they're going to help you." And I began to get help. And I talk about this, trying to be my own sponsor. Well, if I'm going to be my own sponsor, I was the last person I got high with. So how am I going to believe anything I say? I got to, you know, somebody else that's found a way to not do drugs in their life and to recover their life. And so I had to listen. So I finally listened to people, and there was this one guy that just told the truth. And I could see the honesty in him and his willingness to help others. And it was kind of like it was a match made in heaven, really, you know, because we still agree to disagree. Sometimes we don't agree on the same things, but it's all right, because I know that his job through God is to help me. He helped me to see things the way it's supposed to be saw. And if I don't believe him, read it for myself, and I'll get that. And so, my life has just been wonderful. And then I found a church home.
That's fantastic. So I'm going to ask you, when we come back, we're going to take a commercial, but I'm going to ask you, did you do those 90 meetings in 90 days when we get back? We'll be back.
We'll be right back after these messages.
My name is Sheila White. I am the president and co-founder of Her Cries Are Heard, an organization that focuses on preventing violence against females. 1 in 3 women have been victims of physical abuse or violence by an intimate partner or non-partner within their lifetime. 94% of women killed by men were murdered by someone they knew. Violence can affect a woman's physical and mental health and also negatively affect her children. In 1991, my sister was murdered by her husband. And in 2013, my niece was murdered by a man who followed her home from a party. Being a victim of violence is devastating to the victim and the victim's family. Help us to help you. Help us to prevent this from happening to you or someone you love. Please look at our website, www.hercriesareheard.org, for the prevention tools and referrals to help save lives.
We're back.
We're back, and I'd like to thank my listeners for listening in. And I'd have to say that we're enjoying the show. And listeners, if you'd like to make a comment or if you'd like to ask Mr. Ron a question, you may just press the 1. And you'll be streaming live on the internet with your comment or your question. Okay, Mr. Ron, now, the question that we left you with was, did you do the 90 days?
Yes, I did. I did the 90 days, and now I'm at 10 months abstinent of all drugs.
Okay, we have a question from Miss Terry from Texas. Miss Terry?
Hi, Janie White, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hi, Mr. Ron, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Thank you, first of all, for your courage to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
I was wondering, you said that you were very mad with yourself and you just wanted the pain to stop. So two questions. Number one, what pain were you speaking about at that time? And then how did you go through the whole withdrawal process?
Well, I had an internal strife going on inside of me. You have the godly part of you that doesn't want to hurt or hurt others. And then you got the other one that says, oh, it'll be all right. You know, it's all right to do things. And so, and your second question, what was the second one?
What was the withdrawal process like? I see it on TV, and it seems like they're shaking, they're sweating, they're in a lot of physical pain. Is that true?
Well, to some, everybody has different reactions from drug use. I never had that, and I can't say that other people don't, but it never happened to me. But my problem was I didn't think straight. My decision making was all off.
Okay, you didn't actually exhibit any physical pain or the shakes or anything as it weaned out of your body?
No.
Okay. Well, good. That's good. Well, again, thank you for your courage, and thank you, Jenny White.
You're welcome, and thank you for your questions. I appreciate you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Ron.
Yes.
That's interesting. That was a good question that she asked you about the shivers and the shake, because that's all they portray on television. You know, when people are going through withdrawal, everybody's shaking and, you know. So it wasn't the first day or the first night or whatever that you didn't. Did you do drugs every day? You did coke every day?
Practically every day, yes.
So the first time that you didn't do coke for in a, like, 24-hour period, you just didn't exhibit anything. I mean, there was nothing with withdrawal. The reason why I'm asking is because I was a cigarette smoker. And the first time that I withdrew from cigarettes, you know, I had to have something in my mouth. So what I did, I started eating more.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little bit larger now than when I was smoking. But I stopped smoking many years ago. When I was smoking, cigarettes were $1.10 a pack. And I'm told now that they're like $7. So, you know, that's been a long time.
Yeah.
But there was something in me that needed something to replace that. So what you're saying is that you didn't have anything like that?
Yeah, I didn't have that type of physical problems, but I had anger inside of me. I had anger, and I led a hidden secret life. I thought it was so secret. You know, I wasn't that guy that stood in front of a store and begged you for money, or I got it myself. I go get it. So I kind of was hidden, and I just, when I didn't have it, I just would not surface. I wouldn't do anything. So a lot of my problems stem from my anger. So as long as I was calm, I was all right. You know, I didn't exhibit those type of problems. But I heard that some people have, but a lot of people don't have those. Or then you can look at it as you don't know that's what's going on with you.
So then is your situation, is it similar to alcoholism? Like, I've heard people say that they don't drink now, but they're still alcoholics, and you have like a one day at a time kind of thing.
Exactly. The same thing, you know, we cannot forget what we were, what we did. And the disease of addiction continues. I mean, it doesn't stop. This is not something that, okay, I'm cured. I'm never cured of it. It's just arrested. It's just I have to do things that I need to do for me to keep my life balanced and making sure that these problems don't occur. Making sure that I don't go down that path, don't go around the wrong people, don't start thinking that I can handle things, being around drug users or anything. I can't do that anymore. I can't go staying out late at night and not getting my proper rest, not taking my medicine on time. Those things going to meetings, doing participating in church, doing those things, then my disease will kick in again because I'll have that thing on my shoulder telling me, see, told you couldn't do it. And there I go. And so I have to do things that I know that are conducive to my recovery in my life and not just use of drugs, because I got to be careful. You know, going to a casino, and I don't gamble. Now I'm going to go to a casino since I don't got to do something else. Since I'm not doing drugs, I can get an addiction from that. I can get an addiction from sex. I can have an addiction from a lot of different things. So the disease of addiction doesn't just stop with drugs.
Oh, that's really interesting. So then what you're saying is that every single day of your life from now on, that
is
one thing that hangs on your mind every day.
Well, I don't have any fear. I just have to do the right things. You know, I know what I have to do. I know that every day of my life, I'm supposed to do these things for me in order to stay clean of drugs, in order to keep staying on this road to recovery. Because recovery continues. I mean, there's no graduation from it. You have to keep going for the rest of my life. And, you know, I've talked to people, and some people have come into my life, and they thought that, you know, you can do this. No, I can't. You can do that. You don't suffer from the disease of addiction. I do. And so I'm responsible for my recovery. No one else is. No girlfriend, no wife, no husband, none of that. That individual is responsible for his recovery in his life.
Okay, that's great, I think. We're going to take another break, and I'd like to say, those of you that are listening, if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, just press the 1.
If you are in need of life insurance, auto or home insurance, or need help in getting out of debt, call your helpful insurance agents at Prime Financial Services. Did you know, if you add a child rider to your life insurance policy, you can add multiple children for the price of one, starting at $10,000 worth of coverage for under $10. Call today for a free quote at 313-293-0979. Mention you heard this ad on this show for a free gift.
Is your food bland and you want to spice it up? Does it taste like something is missing? What's missing is my seasoning, Butch's Bodacious Seasoning. All-purpose seasoning, good on absolutely everything but ice cream. I'm Linda Porter, President and CEO of Butch's Bodacious Seasoning. To get the spice back in your life, call me at 313-393-2738. You won't regret it. Thank you.
Magnify his name with Elder Charnell P. Blaine and Divine Purpose. For all ministry engagements, contact us at area code 267-240-0709 or email us at dpministry01@aol.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And we're never too tired to give God an unconditional praise. Magnify his name.
We're back with Let's Talk About It with Jenny White.
Okay, thank you for hanging in there with us. We are doing The Other Side of a Cocaine Addiction, and we're talking to Mr. Ron about his cocaine addiction, and we appreciate your honesty, as the other caller said, and that you're coming clean with us. One question I would like to ask you, do you still like being alone?
No. I'm currently in the domiciliary. And one of the things that I had to find out about me was that isolation wasn't good for me. I had to be around people. When we talked, when I talked about change, that was part of one of the changes that I made with me, was to be around people, socialize. Don't go into that room, because that was, that's part of the memories of the darkness that I lived in, a dark room. The dark room consisted of just me and nothing but evil and dark thoughts. And so I can't go into a room and stay in a room anymore and isolate myself from others, because I need those other people to survive. I can't survive in this world alone.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. Can you just go in your room? It's not dark. You have a light. Go in your room and pick up a book and just sit down and read. Is that something that you're able to do?
Yes, I can do that. I do that occasionally. But most of the time, I try to spend as much time with others, learning other people and socializing with them. And that's part of the enjoyment of not being alone, is to being around others. And I pick my times to have alone, my peace time. I can rest when I go to sleep.
Okay, but then you're alone.
I'm asleep.
Yeah, well, is that a heavy burden on you to try to stay away from drugs? Do you sometimes just, if you're sitting, maybe it crosses your mind? Did you enjoy the way it made you feel, or you didn't?
Times I did, but then when I played the tape all the way through, no, at the end, it's always bad. It always ends bad. It ends in me walking back from wherever it was, wherever I was, in the cold, with nobody but me, and faced with spending all my money, and I've done all these bad things I really didn't want to do, but I've done them. And now I have to face me on the walk home, and I just, that was part of the pain that I went through. But today, I'm not afraid anymore. You know, I've got the, as of right now, I don't have the drugs in my system, but I need to continue things in my life to keep me from having those thoughts or feeling a certain type of way.
So are you in counseling now?
I'm constantly in counseling. Yes, I am. I have a psychologist that I speak with once a week. I also go to see a peer support specialist. I attend NA meetings. I also go to groups at the domiciliary during the course of the week. So I'm constantly in counseling, yes.
So is this something that you will have to do for the rest of your life?
I feel it is.
Are you married at the present time?
No, I'm single.
So if you were to get married or something like that, you would still have to go to counseling and be in counseling?
I would like to do that. Yes.
Okay. You feel better.
The person that I'd marry. Yes, I feel better about myself, and because sometimes we can get left alone sometimes, and things don't turn out the way we want them to turn out. So you have to run things by other people. And so this helps me. When I'm going to groups and things like that, when I share when I attend meetings or whatever and I share things, I'm not just helping myself. I'm helping someone there that's faced the same thing that I've faced. And maybe I can show them that this is what I did to correct some of the problems in my life.
Okay. Now, if you were to be married or find someone and you would like to marry them, would you choose someone like you who had been addicted to drugs? Maybe you would find one in one of your group sessions or whatever. Would you consider being close to someone like that?
I never really thought about that, but because I've made a lot of bad choices in my life. And so that's something that I've just turned it over to God. I can't do it by myself. I mean, I don't really know what's in my future, and I don't know who's going to be in my future, but I know that I can't do it alone.
Well, that's a good answer. That's a good answer. I was just wondering if you preferred someone who could understand a lot better. I don't know. That's a good answer that you said, because if you turn it over to God, you know you got it made.
Yeah, that's the only way I can do it, because my track record said I'm going to mess up every time.
Okay.
I'm not going to pick the right one. And so if I limit myself to people that have faced my dilemma, then this is what I'm doing. I'm limiting myself. And I don't think that's the correct thing, because I know people that they were addicted to drugs for years also, but they have successful relationships or marriages, and they have the opposite. So, you know, I don't know, that's not something that I never looked forward to. I mean, I never looked at it like that. Someone sick like me, and I'm going to choose them to be my wife. I never looked at it.
So at present, you're not actively looking for anyone.
No. Well, I'm not actively looking that way.
You're trying to get well yourself.
Exactly.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Are there different stages of addictions?
Are there different stages of addiction? The addiction starts and it progresses, yeah. I mean, you start off small and it progresses. Yeah, so I guess that would be a different stage.
So that's what you did? I mean, maybe you started off with 1 gram and you progressed to something heavier. Because I always heard that once you took that first sniff or smoke or whatever it is of cocaine, that you were automatically addicted. And in reading the 10 facts, it said approximately 10% of people who begin using it will immediately progress to serious, heavy use of the drug. Can you say that's something that happened to you when you first did it for the first, is it?
When I did it for the first time, and I tell people this story, and some people who never used it, and they ask me questions about that, I said, just never pick it up. Because the first time I did it, I didn't do it again for a while. And then all of a sudden, this pleasure center kicks in and says, hey, remember when you did that? It felt good, didn't it? And I done it again and again and again, and it progressed from there. So, no, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy.
Well, did it actually make you feel good when you did it? I mean, after you did it, were you able to function? Was it like a high thing that you get with it? But you were able to somewhat function?
Somewhat function. As time progressed, though, and the more use, I could not function. I thought I was normal, but I was abnormal. But in my sick mind, I thought I was normal.
Okay. But the other people that were around you told you that you weren't. Is that it?
No. No, I probably was. I think I was very quiet doing that. I didn't like noise. I didn't like a lot of movement. So my addiction was really, it was really a high addiction. I was very high. So I didn't want to function. I didn't want to move. I didn't want to go anywhere. So I really couldn't function.
But didn't you say you had a job? You were working?
Yeah, that was the next day. I didn't do drugs while I was working, while I'd be at work. I did it when I got off.
So you were able to function at your job?
That's what I thought. I was functioning. Yeah.
Well, what types of things that people said you were doing that you weren't functioning well in? Your conversation, maybe?
Well, sometimes I'd be tired. I'd be tired. And there's a lot of little things. But people didn't really notice that about me. The most telling part was me not having money. Me making money and not having money. So that was number one. If you looked at, if somebody was to just take a microscope and take a look at me, they could see that. But it was, I tried to hide. And we a drug addict is one of the most cunning human beings on this earth. He can make you believe some things that aren't real. But realistically, I was probably still high at work and just didn't realize that.
Okay. So how long did it take for the entire drug to get out of your system? I know you said that you're drug-free now. So how was it, like a week, 2 weeks?
Wow.
You can't tell?
Well, I couldn't tell you. All I know is when I said it was over with the crack addiction, it was over. And that was when I was in, just before I moved to Detroit. I went to a drug treatment center in Saginaw. And my thoughts was I wasn't going to do crack anymore. And so I left. After I got out of the drug treatment center, the day I got out, 2 days later, I was in Detroit. So I had a plan already in place to stop that. And so it's been over 2 years for crack cocaine for me.
Over 2 years? I thought you said you were 10 months clean.
10 months abstinent of all drugs. Marijuana.
Okay.
That's a
you were still
too.
Doing I mean, that after the cocaine?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, I have another question.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the air with Mr. Ron. You have a question?
Yes, I do, and I have a statement. I'd like to ask. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I'd like to ask to bring out something. I've noticed that it happened on two occasions. A lot of times I've noticed that when people get off the addiction that they have, maybe they're clean for 1 or 2 years or whatever, they're clean, and then they go back to using it. A lot of times, what I've noticed twice, it has taken their life. Can you explain that? I hate to say it that way, but I had one very, sad instance that happened. That he was clean, going to church, everything. But then he went back, and just from that first time after being clean, and then this other lady, after being clean for so long, she went back, and it took her life using the drug again.
Well,
I hate to,
That's okay, because I saw it too. The way I look at that is God gives us opportunities to get our life together. And when I look at this picture of someone, when that happens to them, and I've seen it so many times, even in the place that I am, people leave there and they go back to their drug of choice because they think they can handle it and they lose their life. And so I just think that God, we don't do what we need to do for ourselves, and we go around the same people. We do the same identical thing because now I can handle it now because I've been off it for a minute. And so we go back because we have not been on this, tried to recover. Because you got to recover your whole life. You can't take a day off. You can't, you know, it's something I'm talking about. For me, I know that I have to do things the proper way for me today in order for me to not want to use drugs. I've replaced the drugs in my life with recovery. And this recovery that I'm on, and I know that I need to take my medicine. I need to be, you know, get my proper rest. I need to attend meetings. I need to be involved in the community, in the church, in my domiciliary with my my groups and things. And those are important things in my life.
Uh-huh. Can I ask you something?
Some people. Yes.
Go ahead.
I think some people lose track of that, and we we can stick our chest out and we think we got it made, you know, and we can do it one more time.
It seems like it's lurking. You know, the flesh dies hard. You know, even for dieting, the flesh will die hard. You think you've conquered it, and then that one ice cream cone will send you flying on the field. Probably, you know, it is.
That's
amazing.
Why.
But
I continue to go to groups. I continue to go to NA meetings to remind myself of where the pain of what's going on in my life. And if I don't continue to do that, it can easily come back. I can easily not want to go to meetings and say, oh, I ain't got to go to no meetings. You know, I
just slip back into the same. Have you found out?
Yeah.
Have you researched yourself or prayed about and what caused you to do that in the first place? What's the underlying current in your life that made you go that way? Because I think sometimes if we can find out what was the trigger, what was it in us that made us go that way, then maybe it would help, you know, in us remaining, you know, clean, so to speak.
What I've
have you tried
to understand?
Help?
What I've grown to understand is that my addiction started long before I picked up drugs.
Yeah.
You know, my anger and my isolation started when I was a kid growing up, thinking everything was against me. I always thought of that. And so when I picked up the drugs, that was like something that got me away from that type of pain. You know, thinking I was always alone, nobody cared about me. You know
when you say that, when you say that, I think of the scripture where it says it's not good that man should be alone. And you've been talking about, you know, you being, it's not good. You know, women a lot of times can handle the loneliness because I don't know what, you know, something about us. But the Bible specifically says it's not good that man
That's
should be
Genesis,
alone.
That's Genesis, the second chapter and 18th.
Yeah, it's not good. I was thinking of that. But then you just don't want to find someone you can be with and put all of your hopes and your cares on them because it makes for a bad relationship. But I was thinking about that when you were talking about that. I was listening, you were talking about how you try to keep going to your meeting and stuff so you won't be alone. But that's something you know, might be, you know, something you can research further in your life. But thank you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy.
You're
thank
welcome.
You,
thank
caller.
Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, Ron, can I ask you, are you on medication now? Are you on any medication?
Yeah, well, I take Lantus for my diabetes. I take gabapentin and naproxen for the pain of the arthritis that I have. I also take lisinopril for high blood pressure, but that's about it.
Okay. Okay, you know what, Ron? I'd like to thank you for your candidness in describing and telling the listeners about your addiction. Is there anything mm-hmm. specifically that you would like to leave the listeners with? Anything that you'd like to let us know before you go?
If someone thinks that they have a drug problem and they can't manage their life and their life just doesn't seem right, find some help. There are hundreds of here in the city of Detroit, there are hundreds of NA meetings that you can call and find out about and go to, because sometimes we need to listen to people who faced our dilemma and found a way out. So I think that is what I'd like to leave with others, that you can help yourself and do what you need to do for your life to get on the right path, because as that lady was just speaking of, her friends went back out and they used. Well, God only gives us so many chances in our life. And then we don't learn. If we don't learn, it gets worse each time we go back to them. And so I don't want to go back. And so I'm going to do what I need to do to keep my life in order. And I love this side of my life. So much joy in my heart and the people that I've met and had a lot to do with my recovery. And I say this, everybody that I talk to that says something encouraging or helped me is a sponsor, because you've helped me. You've done something to help me. And that's the love I'm speaking of.
Okay. Well, like I said, I appreciate you for being on and being very candid with us. And hopefully someone learned something, got something out of it, something that they can tell someone else. They might know someone who's suffering from an addiction and try to help them.
Okay.
I'd like to thank all of my callers for calling that asked a question or made a comment. And for those of you that just listened, I'm hoping that you got something out of it along the way. I know I did, because I don't know a lot about cocaine addictions. So it was very informative for me. So I appreciate all of you that called just to listen, those of you that asked questions, made comments, and I appreciate you, especially Mr. Ron, for coming on and being with us. And I'd like to thank you, everybody. Greg. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you very much for having me as your guest. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And you're just a godsend. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So this has been the Let's Talk About It with Jenny White Show, the other side of a cocaine addiction. Thank you, everyone, and good night.